Today, I'm going to talk about some of the research that we've been doing with silicon, and in this case, with respect to low phosphorus application rates. So silicon is considered a beneficial element for plant growth and development, and the plant available form is silicic acid. So don't put sand on the plant because that's not available. That would be silicon dioxide. And so the plant available form, as I said, is silicic acid, which is a soluble form. And we started this research with silicon probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And some of the rationale behind that is that we see that in a lot of field soils are starting to become silicon depleted and silicon deficient due to the weathered nature of the soils as well as continued cropping. And when we look at it from a greenhouse situation standpoint, the use of soilless shrub substrates greatly reduces the amount of silicon in the production system, as well as using various water treatments and purification systems for also limiting the amount of silicon that is in that entire production system. And so then we look to see if we're adding silicon back into our system, are we seeing any benefits in plant growth and development and production? What we found is that we tend to classify plants as either high or low silicon accumulators depending upon how much silicon they take up and accumulate in the foliage. And we have found that silicon can help protect plants during periods of abiotic and biotic stress. And some of the stresses that we have seen be mitigated or alleviated with the addition of silicon is with powdery mildew suppression. And so this was done in our lab with Vinia, as well as it has been done on a number of field crops as well. And so we find that when we add, that when we have plants that are uninoculated, that they look very well. And then when we have plants that are treated with silicon and those that are not treated with silicon, after they have been inoculated with powdery mildew, we have a delay in the onset of powdery mildew as well as a lower total incidence. We also see that silicon can be beneficial in mitigating the effects of heavy metal toxicity. Some of the previous research in our lab has looked at the effects of copper toxicity. And so these are Vinia plants that have been provided high levels of copper with silicon and without supplemental silicon. As well as looking at some research, looking at the effect of both heat stress as well as cold stress in our lab, as well as in Neil Mathison's lab at Cornell. We will see here, these are plants that were exposed to 4C for 3 days. These are actually reversed, sorry. This one is no silicon, and this one is with silicon. Sorry about that. As well as the drought stress and fall stress. So as we've gone through these lists of looking at abiotic and biotic stresses, one thing that we were curious about was if you have a nutrient deficiency in your greenhouse production system, can silicon help alleviate that and help mitigate some of those negative effects? So our objective was to determine if supplemental silicon is beneficial to plants grown at phosphorus-limiting conditions. We started with phosphorus because we are located in Toledo, right on the mouth of Lake Erie, and so we have to deal with potential runoff of nitrogen and phosphorus from the fields as well as in greenhouses, and we hope that we have water that we can drink when we get back home after this conference. So for our experimental methods, we looked at two species, sunflower and petunia, and we picked those two because sunflower is a high accumulator and petunia is a low silicon accumulator. We mixed up our own substrate so we could try to get as minimal background contamination of silicon as possible, and we used the 85-15 mix of feet perlite, and then we used laboratory reagent grade calcium carbonate and magnesium carbonate to provide a lining effect, as well as a wetting agent. And we used a half Koblenz complete nutrient solution, with the differences being that we applied five different rates of phosphorus that range from 0.08 up to 0.66 millimolar of phosphorus. And then half of those solutions were provided with no potassium silicate, and half of them had 2 millimolar potassium silicate. And for those solutions that did not have any potassium silicate added, we used potassium sulfate as an offset. So seedlings were transplanted into 12 centimeter pots in November. 8 plants for treatment. They were grown in Toledo, Ohio, in a glass greenhouse. The temperatures are 22 day, 18 night temperature set points, ambient radiant, and then we had some supplemental high pressure sodium lamps to provide lighting during cloudy days, as well as for some day extension to create a 14-hour photo period. Plants were harvested 9 weeks after transplant once they reached the flowering stage, and it was set up in a greenhouse as a split plot with silicon as the main plot and phosphorus as a sub plot. So what we found in the case of sunflower is that there was not a significant interaction between silicon and phosphorus for any of our plant growth parameters that we looked at. Not surprisingly, there was a significant impact of phosphorus rate. What we did see in terms of number of days to flower, that there was an impact of silicon. So here is a representation of each of the individual treatments. So this was going from low to our highest rate of phosphorus supply, and the top are plants that did not have any additional silicon applied to them, and then on the bottom are our 2 millimolar application of silicon. And so we saw some effects of flowering there. So as I mentioned, the main effect of phosphorus was primarily our driving factor in terms of vegetative growth. And in most cases, as we would increase the rate of phosphorus, we saw a decrease in the number of days of flower here, as well as we saw increases in flower size and plant growth as we increased phosphorus up to about 0.33 millimolar, in which case above that we didn't see significant additional increases. And as I mentioned, silicon did result in earlier flowering. On average, it was 2 days across all of the treatments. So the plants that were provided with supplemental silicon flowered after 51 days, and those that did not have supplemental silicon flowered at about 63 and a half days. For pursuing gas, which was our low silicon accumulator, we did see that there was an interaction between silicon and phosphorus with respect to flower number. And in cases where there was not a significant interaction, we did have a number of cases where phosphorus was a significant effect. And we did see an impact of silicon in terms of relative chlorophyll content. So here is a picture of the treatment, ranging again from lower to higher levels of phosphorus without silicon and with silicon. And so as I mentioned, there was a significant interaction in terms of flower number with respect to petunia. And what we would see is that on this graph here, we go from our lower to our higher rates of phosphorus with flower number. And the white or clear circles are plants that did not receive supplemental silicon. And then the darkened circles are the ones that did receive supplemental silicon. So we saw at the very low rate, there was not a difference in terms of flower number between those with and without silicon. But as we increased our phosphorus rate, we saw an increasingly greater amount of flowers on those plants that also received supplemental silicon. We looked at the foliar tissue analysis of both the sunflower and the petunia, and we would see that for silicon here, that there wasn't a huge difference in the amount of silicon uptake across those treatments for both the sunflower and the petunia. And a lot of that is due to the fact that there was a lot of variability from plant to plant, which is inherent in silicon research. There tends to be a lot of variability there. And in all cases, as we increased our phosphorus application rate, we did have an increase in the leaf tissue concentrations. And then another thing that was interesting to us is that we did take the time and we had the help to actually wash all of the media off of all of the roots to harvest that. That was a nice 2-day process there. And so then we could look to see where silicon was accumulating in the plant and look at it in both in terms of the roots and the shoots. And part of that is because we know that with silicon that there's 2 main transporters that are responsible for silicon uptake and accumulation in the plant. And they're both located in the roots, and one is responsible for silicon uptake into the roots, and the other is responsible for silicon export from the roots up into the shoots. And historically, we looked at silicon accumulators and we classified them as either low or high based on how much silicon is accumulating in the shoots. And we're starting to go back and look to see that it's important to look at the roots. So we were finding in all of our treatments that even in our low accumulator species, we do have a fair amount of silicon that was taken up in the roots. We're just not seeing it up in the shoots. Whereas in sunflower, there's a much greater difference in terms of the distribution, and we still have a fair amount in the roots, but significantly more uptake in the shoots. So in summary, we found that when we have low phosphorus application rates in petunia and sunflower production, silicon supplementation did not strongly impact the vegetative growth. That was primarily driven by phosphorus. However, silicon was beneficial in enhancing flowering characteristics. In the case of sunflower, we saw earlier flowering, and in the case of petunia, more flowers. As well as in the absence of other nutrient deficiencies, we found that petunia and sunflower could be grown at low phosphorus application rates, which would be important for growers in Northwest Ohio as well as other parts of the country, and we could still produce marketable plants. And where we saw times at cutoff above which we saw no further increase in improved growth was around 0.33 or more phosphorus, which would translate to about 10 parts per million. So with that, I would like to acknowledge all of our technical support staff that make our research happen and gets us our plant data collected and tissue concentrations analyzed. And with that, I've got 4 minutes for questions, if there are any. Yes.
Flowering again. In the case of sunflower, you said flowered earlier.
So the question was, in the case of sunflower, was that due to faster development or was that due to fewer nodes? And that was due to faster development. So it was a similar node number.
How would you explain that?
That is a good question that we will follow up with. We're looking to see how silicon would be beneficial in terms of the flowering development pathway there. Unless you have any grand ideas to offer up.
Do you measure plant temperature?
We did not measure plant temperature. We do know that silicon can impact stomatal conductance rate and in other plants, I don't know about petunia and sunflower, but in other plants we can see a slight bit of stomatal closure with supplemental silicon and that you have greater water use efficiency and slightly less transpiration. So potentially lower the temperature if there's less transpiration. That was the number of flowers at the end of the experiment, and that included spent flowers, as well as those that were open. We did not count buds, flower buds.
Again, same question. Information.
That is a good question. Yes.
Were the root sizes different as you increased the amount of silicon?
The question is, did we see differences in root mass, and for that, it was hard to get complete recovery of all of the roots that you get a total content. There was slight differences in rooting, and we're not quite sure if that was on the basis of silicon effect or if in the plants that are a little bit smaller, since we did not leach, so we apply the same amount of solution to everyone, that those plants that were smaller tended to stay a little bit wetter than those that were larger. Yes.
I understand potassium silicate has a pretty high pH in solution. Did you adjust your pH to open solution in nutrients?
Yes. So the question was that potassium silicate has a high pH. It has is about close to 10 in order to get it solubilized. And in that case, after we added it to the open solution, then we would adjust the pH down to about 5.86. We use laboratory grade, so we use solentic acid, and then we solubilize that in solution with potassium hydroxide, which was the result of the very high pH initially in the solution, and so then we would bring the pH down with hydrochloric acid. All right, thank you.